Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hi, I'm Paul Capelli.
And I'm Stephen
Crutchfield.
And together we're Living Villa Capelli. Welcome back, guys. We're here.
Hi, we're back. It's summertime.
I know.
It's hot.
It is hot. I wish we could play the fan, have the fan going, but
no.
I know, it would mess up our sound, all that good stuff. All right, should we just jump right into it?
Yes, we should.
Because it's late here and we're going to do this. This is an epic episode, I think. I don't know what to title it. What are we going to say? The X number? Because I don't know how many this is going to be. Because Paul has his list. I have my list. X number of things.
All the things Italians do better.
Okay. X number of things Italians do better.
All the things Italians do better.
Okay, all the things. But I'm going to have a number on it when I do the title.
Whatever.
When I have the show notes. I'm going to have a number. All right.
I have a cold. A summer cold.
You do?
So my voice is even deeper than usual.
Oh my gosh. What's going to happen when you have your movie role?
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Yes. Dun, 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 teaser. All right, Paul, you can go first. Number one.
Oh, what do you mean? Well, number one is the easiest.
What are you going to say?
Food and cooking.
Okay, yeah. That was on my list, too.
I mean, come on. Italians do cook better than anybody else. You know, Italians, especially down here, are very, very proud of Italian food. They often will tell you that the Italian cooking and Italian food is the best food in the world. Which I kind of take exception to it because it is really, really great food, obviously. But, you know, to say that it's the best food in the world, it's a bit much.
No, Italians do it better than anybody else in the world. I'm sorry. No, but in my regards to food, what I wrote down note-wise, it's not necessarily about what makes them great is the idea of eating seasonally, that they do amazingly well. We've talked about this before. And it's very simple. Because it's seasonal, I think, is why it's so simple. You don't have to do a lot to make the food amazing. You don't have to cover it with a bunch of sauces and fancy crap.
But what you do have to do, which I'm just learning from my dear old mom, is that you really have to cook like the basis, like the little sauce, the sofrito, whenever you make stuff, you know, the chopped onions and garlic and parsley and all that stuff. You really got to let that cook for a while in order for that to get really flavorful.
Well, you're kind of caramelizing it, which gives it flavor. Yeah, yeah, you're cooking it. So yeah. No, you have
And you know, the other interesting thing is, you know, I think a lot of French people, of course, would think that French cooking is the best in the world. And it may be the most complicated cooking in the world. But French cooking, from what I understand, I don't know if it's true or not, but from what I understand, Catherine de Medici, when she went to France or moved to France, she brought Italian cooking, Italian cuisine with her to the French. And that was the basis, the foundation of what we know today as French cuisine.
Yeah, she took her chef with her, right?
Yeah.
And all her food, yeah. I'd like to look that up. You know what? In the show notes, guys, livingvillacapelli.com/53. I'll look that up, and that'll be at the bottom of the show notes to have some more information on that and see if it's true or not. We've always heard that, but I've never actually looked it up to see if it is or not. Oh. Oh, am I number two?
You're number two.
Already?
I need a pen to cross off my stuff.
But anyway, here. I'll throw it to you. Number two is fashion. And I'm going to, I would say that in two parts, I think design, obviously, and also in just everyday fashion, the way everyday Italians dress and wear their stuff. So obviously we know all the big designers, the Italian designers. Help me out here, though. Versace, Gucci, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a fashion person, so this should not be my category.
Valentino.
Okay.
Some other big Prada.
Oh, Prada's done. Oh, I didn't know that was
Italian. I mean, there's a lot of them.
Obviously. But I will say, but on
Dolce
that
Dolce & Gabbana.
That's true.
Roberto Cavalli.
Si.
I mean, there's tons of them.
But on the other flip side of that.
And again, the French, of course, would take exception to that. Yeah, Christian Dior.
But I don't know. There's something about
Yves Saint Laurent.
Italian
Chanel.
But again, I think, but maybe the French would probably take exception to this too. I think the populace is, I wouldn't say, what's the right word? Extremely aware and also not obsessed, but
I think Italians are a little bit of fashion victims. I think they are a little bit.
Not victims?
Yeah.
No. And what do you mean? In what sense? What do you mean by that?
In the sense that they go a little overboard.
Okay. Yeah. No.
With their fashion and style. I mean, but it's good for the economy because that's what keeps it going.
But they do it better. They are always dressed great.
Yes.
They look great. They like.
And what's that called in Italian? There's a phrase for it.
I don't know.
It's very famous. La bella figura. Putting on a good show. Yes. You can't leave the house even to go food shopping unless you're dressed.
Yes. I mean, and you'll see even the men when they do their passeggiata at night, they're all especially the older men,
mm-hmm.
dressed, a lot of times in suits, even in the heat.
At least a sport coat and tie.
Yeah.
So even maybe draped over their shoulders like Marcello Mastroianni.
Exactly.
But it is pretty cool, though, to see... It's a nice sense of style.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And that to me, it's like, it's yes, they're victims in the sense of like, it's 90 degrees out and you really don't need a jacket, but they look great.
Yes.
Especially the older. I mean, I'll kind of preface that a little bit, the older generation especially, I think.
Yeah.
The newer generation is kind of getting...
Americanized.
Yes. And, it's not nearly as nice. But Italians, as far as the rest of the world, they look immaculate. I mean, Nino, a lot of times... Although now all of a sudden I say that, and this summer he's kind of changed his ways, but he used to come to the villa in a dress shirt and then change into a dress shirt to do his work.
Yes.
I was like, wait a second, this makes, I know it's an older dress shirt and it's probably stained or something, but he was always dressed in really nice clothes when he was doing like gardening, and I was like, okay, this doesn't compute really.
No, but I mean, one of the great things about Italian women, actually, even when they dress, especially in summer, and you've seen it in all the movies from, with Anna Magnani and Sophia Loren, Italian women, and French a little bit too, but Italian women especially, because of the really hot weather, when they put on a simple summer dress, they are so friggin' sexy.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just beautiful.
Yeah.
It really is. Nice cotton and flowing, and they just look great. And Italians are much better at, one of their big things is accessorizing. We've spoken about this before.
Yeah.
Everything from scarves to
jewelry
really to
jewelry.
Man purses.
Well, your mom, I'm surprised how much your mom has carried that through.
Oh, man.
Because she wasn't, I mean, she hasn't been here for 6 years.
My mom sits in her room all day long, sitting on the sofa, extremely overweight.
In a muumuu,
basically, watching TV. But if I say to her, Mom, we're going to bring some guests over to visit you. All right, just give me a few minutes. She gets all the bling out.
Yeah.
She puts on her earrings, her rings,
and
her
looks good.
She looks really good.
Paul's taking a couple of pictures. That'll be in the show notes, guys. Go to that. livingvillacapelli.com/53. He has a couple pictures where
Connie
amazing.
Is blinged out.
It's amazing. It's really cool. All right, your turn, number three.
Okay. Nobody does this as much as the Italians, almost again to a fault. The way they love their kids and their family.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it is just unbelievable. Kids here are mini gods.
Oh, yeah. It's the old joke, but it should be an Italian joke.
Which one?
Well, how do you know Jesus was a...
Was a Jew. Sure. How do you know Jesus was Italian? Right.
Yeah.
The way people, if a little baby is anywhere in the vicinity, everybody, man, woman, and child, just goes crazy to give affection on this kid. Everything is done for their kids here. So much so that they won't dare leave their kids to a babysitter.
I was going
to
say, that's why I think the non-babysitter thing comes in.
Because they don't dare leave their child for a minute.
I have that listed too. I mean, my biggest example of this too is the fact that we've talked about this before, about how they all go home at 1 o'clock to eat lunch with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And also on Sunday, you don't dare not eat lunch with your family on Sunday.
Yeah.
Like you're a heathen.
Yeah.
You're abandoning the family. I mean, it's definitely, and there's lots of people living multi-generational within the home. You know, you'll definitely see the grandmother helping take care of the kids, the grandkids, and they're all living in the same room. So very, very much family oriented.
Yeah, when grandparents go into retirement, they become the babysitter because then their kids have to go to work to, you know, to help sustain the family, and the grandchildren are left with the grandparents, which is also kind of cool, though. I mean, it's a great way to grow up.
Yeah.
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 The other one that goes along with that, though, I'm jumping
in. You can jump in.
Is the way Italians show affection.
Okay, yeah.
Italians are very affectionate people. But, you know, to a certain extent, though, they don't really overdo it. You know, they give that double kiss, which, by the way, if you come to Italy, here's a rule of thumb. When you're going to go and give the double kiss, you know, one on each cheek to say hello or to say goodbye, you always aim for their left cheek, all right? So you go across the body to their left cheek and then to the right cheek.
So two left cheeks are touching and then two right cheeks are touching.
Exactly.
Yes.
And if you don't do that, you're going to end up with a lip lock with somebody that you don't want to be kissing but square on the lips.
I will say, and I think we've talked about this before, but also especially maybe coming from our perspective as two gay men, it's also nice to see the straight men have no problem showing affection, not just to the girlfriends, but also to their friends, male friends.
Yeah.
So you'll see them like put their arms around each other, kind of horse around, but even just everyday normal affection, putting your arm around somebody where, I mean, I don't think you hardly see two straight guys put their arms around each other.
Sitting down at a bar or a restaurant, I mean, two good friends will just sit there for an hour with their arms around each other.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not a sexual thing at all. It's just an affection. It's they love being close to each other.
Yeah, it's a touchy, they're very touchy-feely sort of thing. Well, I have that kind of, no, that's not the same thing. I had that down, but I swallowed it up.
Whatever. Next, your turn.
We're all the same. Where am I going to go with this one? What do I want to do?
I can go to another one if you want.
Okay, go another one and I'll see.
Nobody takes it easy like Italians do.
Yes, I have that one down.
Yeah, I mean, relaxation and not overdoing it is totally Italian thing.
And what's that one called? There's a phrase for that.
Dolce far niente.
See, dang, I had that one down. See?
It's the sweet do nothing.
But the other people would refer it to, what's the other one? La dolce vita.
No, la dolce vita is different. The dolce vita is enjoying the life around you, the countryside, the sun, the weather, the clothing, riding on the back of a Vespa, going shopping, going to the beach. That's the sweet life is...
Life is amazing. Life is great. Enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas dolce far niente is like, it's so sweet to just be able to just sit down and do nothing for a while.
Yeah.
Which they really made that into an art form.
Yes. The fact that they have a phrase for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that even shows you how much of a part of the culture.
There's also a very good California wine called Far Niente. Because that's what you really do when you sit down for a good glass of wine.
That's a great name for a wine.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a good wine, too. It's a good one.
All right. I'm going to say this one because it's along with the passion, it's like, passion, they argue and discuss things with passion like nobody else in the world.
Yeah.
Especially with their hands.
Uh-huh. And raising their voices.
But
especially
I mean,
in the South.
I mean, I've seen people have arguments over directions. Like, no, you turn right, not left. No, it's 2 kilometers, not 1 kilometer. I'm like, okay,
don't know. You've never been there.
It's like they're arguing. I'm like, calm down. It's directions to the store. But they get very passionate, and it's all funny. Like if you don't know, probably most Italian Americans, it's probably very similar. But I think a lot of other WASP cultures, like mine, where it's very very reserved. When you first come into that, it's you get taken back a little bit. You're like, oh my gosh, they're having a fight.
Right.
No, they're not having a fight. They're having a talk. not even an argument. Most of the time it's just a talk.
And actually, you know, speaking of that, even when they do get into arguments like road rage, for example. Mm-hmm. Road rage in Italy is nothing like road rage in America. You know, road rage in America is, you're on the LA freeway and someone cuts you off, so you pull up next to him, you pull out your gun and you shoot him in the head. That doesn't happen here for the most part. I'm sure there are instances of it. But when two people get into an argument on the road, like an intersection or over a parking spot, whatever, they'll both get out of the car. They will start screaming and yelling, but nobody will ever lift a hand or a finger towards the other one.
And I've seen
never, it very, very rarely becomes violent or physical.
And I've seen them get in those fights over what it probably amounts to a scratch. I mean, there's no way. Somebody actually bumped into somebody, and I've seen, we drove by, I was like, there's not a scratch on that car even, but the people are yelling at each other.
Well, yeah,
they're really passionate about it.
You know, they treat a scratch on their car the same way most people treat the way the Italians treat a scratch or a scuff on their new shoes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I mean, shoes here is like, oh my god.
There goes fashion.
Fashion again.
All right, do you want to go? Or you want me to go again?
Fashion. No, you can go.
I'm gonna put this one in because this kind of goes with the fashion that we were talking about. Design.
Mm-hmm.
And it's design meaning more of like
I have it down as interior design.
Interior design. Okay, that's kind of where I'm going with it. Yes, exactly.
But it also goes to car design.
I have cars as a separate one.
Okay.
Because I think their cars as a separate or do you want to consider the same
design
one?
In general. I mean it's fallen off recently.
All design.
But you know, back in the 70s and even earlier, you know, Italian design was it. You know, all the American hot rods, all the American sports cars were all designed by Italians. Yeah. Pininfarina, Carmen Ghia, all the big car designs were all Italians. Was it Bertone who did the Camaro, I think. But, you know, not as much now because, you know, I think anywhere in the world, everything looks like a Ford now. You know, it looks like a Ford Focus.
Yeah, I do like I like a lot of the brands. I don't see, but it's not necessarily all Italians. But like, I like the little Fiats here.
Yeah, yeah,
the Fiats actually pretty cute. I mean, they're cute. They're not sports cars, amazing, but they're cute.
But I think most of the world has
I agree.
Gone off the design wagon, unfortunately, because design seems like something that you should pay for good design, but people see it now as an extra luxury that I don't need to pay for. You know,
with the introduction of IKEA and places like that, probably, right?
But even IKEA, you know, stems from that Scandinavian classic design. The Gio Ponti, a famous Italian furniture designer, knocked off pretty well. But you know, if you think of cars today, right? All cars pretty much look the same. But back then, you used to be able to really identify a car very quickly. Like a Volvo was a Volvo.
Yes, true.
A Saab was unmistakable.
A Volkswagen.
A Volkswagen was unmistakable.
Yeah.
A Ford Mustang was unmistakable.
Yes, true. Now they're all generic. Yeah,
They're all like a different version of the same thing.
Yeah, I had to look at whatever the logo is on the grill to figure out what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Most of the time. No, but I would think... I think the design and the interior design for me in Italy has not dropped off.
No, Italian furniture is still
beautiful. There's some. Yeah. I mean, what was your cousin? It was that kitchen designer that she was.
Oh yeah, I forget the name of the company. Milan.
I mean, some of these designs where the counter swivels this way.
As a matter of fact, his kitchen designs are in MoMA.
Oh yeah, some beautiful. We have a tray that they gave us actually as a gift. That's my favorite tray. It's beautiful.
It's a friggin' tray, but it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. No.
And it's simple.
It's metal, but then he did it with this wood around. Oh, it's a beautiful tray. And it's so freaking functional at the same time.
Yeah.
That's what I think about it. It's so beautiful. They do a really great job of beautiful, but also in designing the function into it as well. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely the best in the world.
Because it should be form meets function, not form over function.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, bitch.
Oh, throw that in there, Mr. Professor. Do you have another one you want me to go?
You can go.
No, go ahead.
This one goes along with food, and we touched on it a little bit earlier. The way Italians enjoy meals. Italians enjoy meals like nobody else. You know, you sit down at a designated hour, usually 1 o'clock at lunch, because, you know, in Italy, lunch is the big meal, not dinner. You eat a big lunch, and dinner is usually leftovers or... You know, you pick stuff, you know, stewed zucchini. And there's a big difference between Italians and Americans, where Italians, Americans, I think, eat more for sustenance. You know, it's time, I got to eat because it's, you know, I feel that my body's getting weak or I'm getting tired or it's time to eat. Whereas Italians sit down and they enjoy every single thing at that table.
Well, it goes back to enjoying life.
Yes,
I mean that's part of it.
And like, but every taste, you know, we have a lot of Americans and foreigners who come to the villa, obviously. And one of the things that I noticed that I'm sort of a prick about it actually, but you know, you put all the plates on the table, you know, all the servings, you know, the meat, the poultry, the vegetables, the salad, all sorts of stuff, right? And Americans will load everything onto the plate. You know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this. Even when you go to a restaurant in America, it's pretty much, you know, you just put everything on the plate, everything has its place. Whereas in Italy, we don't do that. You know, you put your meat on the plate and you eat the meat. Then you put the vegetables on your plate and you eat your vegetables. And then you put the salad on the plate and you eat your salad. Mm. So I think you're really getting to enjoy each presentation, each portion that is put on the table, as opposed to, we've had some people come here and they'll just put everything and actually literally mix it together. Like if you give them pasta and a salad, I've seen people, not Americans, they've mixed their pasta and their salad together. It's disgusting.
I've seen that.
It's so
that.
Gross.
Who was that? Was that the Swede, I think?
I think it was Scandinavians.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty bad.
All right, I'm going to go off that one a little bit because we were on food a little bit. Coffee. They do coffee better than anybody else in the world, I believe.
Yes, I was just in France, and I got to tell you, I had forgotten. I've been to France a lot of times. I went to the south of France recently for a weekend at the Cannes Advertising Festival, and the coffee in France totally sucks. It is worse than American coffee.
I will say, I'm wondering, I mean, I remember, but this was a long time ago. I remember Turkish coffee that's really good?
Yeah, Turkish is good. Greek is not as good. Turkish is good, though, but only because it's so sweet.
Is that what it is? Because they do it in, I mean, for me, though, but for here, obviously, coffee is also a passion, what's the word I'm looking for? Not a lifestyle, but
it's a ritual.
It's a ritual for them. And it's like, and it's obviously we've talked about it. You only drink it for 30 seconds. You're at the bar. You don't have a big cup. But I mean, it's funny for me. Paul used to say this and I would come visit when I would come and I was only coming 3 times a year, pretty much. And I still loved my American coffee. But now when I go back, I totally agree with him. American coffee is dirty dishwater.
Yes,
now I have it, and I'm like, what is this? It's like this weak, watery.
It doesn't even taste like coffee.
And it's weird, though, but it's funny how much because you just become accustomed to it and how you appreciate it for what it is when you do that. You're not putting a bunch of creamer and sugar in it. So basically having cream and sugar with watered-down coffee, it's just different experience.
Even black coffee in America black coffee in America is probably worse than putting all cream and sugar in it. At least with cream and sugar, you get some kind of taste.
That's true. But the Amaro, once you get used to it, coffee shouldn't be bitter. I mean, it's not necessarily, it's a little bit of bitter, but it's not really brewed bitter, right.
I think it's the difference between not bitter. It's not that it's bitter, it's just not sweet.
Exactly.
I don't think bitter is the opposite of not sweet. Bitter is the opposite of sweet.
To some degree, but not really. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny because like you think of it without the sugar. Oh my gosh. Because when I stopped doing the sugar, it took me a while. But after about a month, I was like, okay, now I'm actually probably really tasting the coffee. I get it. So I don't know.
And it's weird too because you know Italy, of course, doesn't grow coffee beans, right?
That's what.
So people bring us coffee beans from a place like Brazil, and Brazil is known for their coffee beans. Brazil, Colombia, and these places, and you know what? It ain't as good as Italian coffee.
But it's about the roasting it.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. It's all about the roasting, what they call here torrefaction. Mm. Torrefazione. It's Italians know how to roast the beans yes. better than anybody else in the world.
And one of these days, there'll be another segment. I want to do like all the different, there's probably like 10 different ways to order coffee.
Right.
And, which is fascinating to me.
And like, Starbucks has
ruined all of them, especially for poor Americans who come here.
Right.
I was just recently, we had a guest and she asked for a latte and I was like, no, don't ask for a latte.
Right.
That's going to get you a glass of milk. All right. Do you have another one, Paul?
Yes. I don't think anybody keeps a clean house like Italian women.
That's a good one.
Italian women are fanatics about keeping a clean house. I mean, I've never seen houses as clean as Italian homes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The women just, I mean, they even wash the steps of their condominium themselves. I mean, they hate dust. They're mortified that anyone should walk in and see dust. They just clean.
They're not
clean,
living on the Via
clean.
Appia.
Oh, I know, right?
I mean, it's seriously within 5 minutes of dusting, there's a dust layer.
I was at in our house here this morning. I went to the eating area near the pool where most of our guests eat in summertime. And I got to tell you, because there are a couple of Italian women staying here with, it's a Puerto Rican group, actually, a group from Puerto Rico. Some of them are Puerto Rican, but a lot of them are Italian descent. And there were two Italian women who also run a restaurant. I have never seen that area so clean every single day.
Yeah,
it is
they don't do
immaculate.
Yeah, and actually, if you walk in, because I walk through the kitchen to get there.
The kitchen is the same thing.
Same thing. I mean, there's a few things left out for breakfast every once in a while, but not plates. It's more like fruit they left out or something.
Yes.
It's like, no
it is spotless.
Yeah, that's
spotless.
Right. You're right. I never didn't think that. Now that you say that, you're so right.
Yeah. I've never seen that area that clean.
Especially because most people, like even just guests here a couple of days, so I'll walk through and I'm like, can you not like take your beach towel that you use for the pool and like put it next, like they just leave it on the chair. Just leave it on the chair.
How about when we had that group with what's his name?
Get interested. No, you don't have to talk. No, don't say specifics. I'll leave you out.
But
there was an individual. Yes.
His group, a famous TV celebrity. His group, they left panties and bras everywhere, like in the eating area. There was another group from a Middle East country.
Yes.
Who left dirty diapers under chairs.
I will say that once you point that out to somebody or somebody mentioned it, they immediately, it wasn't their fault, but they went and picked it up for the other people.
But it's not the same as Italian women will not leave a place dirty.
But the funny part with that group, I remember it was the New Yorkers, the two gay guys from New York, who went around and picked up all the clothes around the pool. It was probably literally a pile, maybe 2 feet, like all the clothes that was all around the pool, including bras, swimsuits, those clothes. They just put it in a big pile. And basically that, just because they were tired of seeing it themselves, and they left it, that pile stayed there until they left.
Yeah.
Nobody went through and said, oh, where's my swimsuit? Where's my bra? It was just like a pile of clothes in the middle of...
And before they made that pile...
It was so weird.
Before they made that pile, there were like bras and panties and all sorts of crap all over the place. And people would just walk over it and it's like, it's not mine. I don't care. Whereas Italian women would never, ever, ever let that happen. Not in a million years.
No.
They would pick it up. They would wash it. They would iron it and fold it and give it back to you.
It's true. All right. My next one is art appreciation. That Italians have this. I don't know if they study it in school
they do.
But they definitely have, to me, from my experience, the rest of the world, they definitely have an appreciation. Maybe because also there's so much art here.
They live in the middle of it.
I know. But
they're surrounded by it.
I mean, we talked about this on, I have no idea what podcast this was, guys, back in the day with Paul Freeman, our photographer friend from Australia, but how he does male nudes and he brought out his book. Paul brought out his book and he was kind of nervous, like, okay, there's a bunch of women here. Usually the women do not like these kind of books. And meanwhile, the women here were like looking through this, like, oh my gosh, look at the light on this photo. Look at how great this is. Look at the pose on that one. Oh, this is, how'd you do that? And they appreciated it for what it was,
And they also tell you, like, it's reminiscent of, you know, Caravaggio, or the lighting is like Da Vinci.
Yeah.
You know, they know their stuff.
Yeah.
Me?
Yep, you're up.
Italians are also very, very respectful. You know, they still use, a lot of them still use the formal lei for almost like thou. Yeah, that's fallen off a little bit, but you know, you would never call a woman that you have, that it's the first time you've met, you would never refer to her by her first name until she says you can. It's always signora. If someone is a college graduate, it's always dottore. And as you're speaking to them and you're using the formal version, you then ask permission to use the informal, the friendly version. May I call you, as opposed to thou? And the person usually gives their consent, of course. But, I mean, for Americans, it's really
I say,
weird.
Thank goodness I'm a bad American, because I just go right to the friendly, because
right.
Keeping it straight to me is like
Because you also have to change all the tenses
of
the verbs.
I learn the friendly, because at least in my... They teach you both on my tapes and my lessons, but a lot of people say in those lessons that they counter what you're saying. They say the formal is dropping off more and more.
No, I said that earlier.
Oh, you did? Oh, yes. Okay, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So like for me, it's easier just to learn the informal. Correct. And I go right to the informal.
But what they don't do, which is kind of weird, that Americans do much better, is they don't say thank you all the time.
And they don't.
No.
And even when you say it, they're kind of a taken back.
When you say thank you, when you say thank you, like if you just say, could you pass the wine, please? They pass you the wine, you say thank you. And they'll say, what are you always saying thank you for?
Yeah.
Americans say thank you all the time. At least, you know, ones who are brought up properly. But Italians, it's especially with friends and family, they don't expect a thank you.
No.
Which is kind of weird, because it goes contrary to what they're all about.
Okay.
Next, Stephen, you got another one?
I'm going to say politics. I think Italians, I mean, this is probably a pretty big boast, but I think Italians are pretty dang good compared to the rest of the world in politics. And I mean by this, not just politics, meaning, I think, governing, but also just politics in dealing
in governing, they're horrible.
Not governing, but meaning politics, meaning dealing with people and figuring out, I can kind of give you this if you give me this, or I can make friends with you because you can give me this. Like, it's all about kind of working the system.
Yeah, which is what politics is supposed to be.
Exactly, yeah.
I give you this if you give me that, and it's all, you know, behind the scenes work, and it's all, you know, true politics. It's not politics just of, you know, I belong to this party, you belong to that party.
Exactly.
I think the biggest example of it is Machiavelli's The Prince, where he talks about all the backstabbing. It's all about politics being done right. A count in Parma who was a very good, close friend of our family's passed away now. He's the father of still a very dear friend of ours, Gianmarco Cantelli. Shout out to you. He told me once, he said, you know, you Americans are amazing. You're geniuses at marketing and advertising and promotion and sales and all that stuff. But when it comes to politics, you don't know shit.
So true.
Because, you know, American politics don't have the subtlety that Italian or even European politics. There's a lot more subtlety. Like when you see people write on Facebook and they're talking politics and going after each other, they'll always end the whatever the argument is with, and I hope you have a good day, sir. You know, they always give you this little I'm being very polite, but meanwhile, you know, they put a knife in your back.
But there's also, I think,
Julius Caesar.
That's what I'm saying. I was gonna say it goes back to even before that, because it goes back to Julius Caesar with politics. But also, the multi-party system kind of forces that to some degree, because we're in America, you just like it's more black and white.
Yes.
It's more like if one
party,
that side.
If one party's in control, they command.
And it's either this or that.
When
it's
Italy and most of Europe,
it's all about subtleties and
compromise.
Yeah, yeah. You have to
compromise.
So it's which is good and bad. We talked about that in the last episode.
Yeah.
If you missed that episode, that was all about Paul running for political office in Italy. So check that one out.
I got the next one.
Okay, go.
Personal hygiene. Unlike the French, who we've always said invented perfume because they
Lost all of our one French listener.
Oh, I'm sorry, but you know the French have been very good about usurping Italian things, like we said earlier, food. The biggest thing is when it comes to personal hygiene, the bidet. I mean, Italians invented the bidet.
They did.
Which yes.
Actually invented it?
Yes.
I did not know this.
And every bathroom in Italy has a bidet. And we have friends who can't use a public bathroom if they have to do number two because there's no bidet.
They claim that they will like crawl into the sink if they have to.
They'll put their butt up in the sink so they can wash their butt after they take a poop. Because whereas Americans come here and they think, oh, look, it's a little place to wash your feet.
Yeah.
It's not to wash your feet. It's to wash your poontang.
Yeah. It is a nice concept. I mean, I'm
Steven's gotten used to it, actually.
I kind of like my bidet.
But no country in the world
I'm fresh and clean.
Italy is just all about bidets.
And actually, it's funny every time we do a bathroom here, now we've done so many bathrooms, but like the plumbers look at you like, you're not putting a bidet in?
Right.
Like, what do you mean? You're not putting a bidet in? What do you mean? I was like, 90% of our clientele does not
know what a bidet is.
So we don't need a bidet. Like, we just put the new ones up. At least there we just have a wand.
But even that, though, is pretty amazing, right? That, you know, I mean, they'll forgive you for not having a bidet as long as you have a wand next to the toilet, which is basically a sort of douching.
Yeah, but it's actually like, that's actually hard to use, too. Like,
I know, but you kind of stick it up there and like, clean everything out.
There we go. Nice and clean.
But they are sticklers about it. I'm telling you. I mean, they're going to be clean. Italians are very clean, I guess, in general. You know?
Yeah. You want me to go?
Yep.
All right. I don't know where to throw this one out, but I'm going to throw it out there. Sex.
Oh. What is that all about?
Italians are really good at sex. I'll just say that and I'll leave it there. Okay, done. Okay, Paul, your turn.
What is that all about? I think Italian is just very good. I think Italian is good at romance.
And passion.
Yes.
And that's where it all comes back.
And but Southern Italian men do have big... no, never mind.
Big hearts.
Yes. And, you know, along with personal hygiene, though, nobody knows their bodies like Italians do. I mean, to a fault. You know, if they have... an ache or a pain, or they know exactly where that pain is coming from. They know exactly how it started, where it's going. They know their anatomy, like inside their body, unlike anybody else I've ever seen. I mean, you know, they have, cervicale, you know, when you have a stiff neck or a headache, it's all based on your cervical bones at the bottom of your brain. Pretty amazing how they just know everything about their body.
Yep. Do you have another one?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go.
Driving.
Oh, that was on mine. Yes, I did. With cars. I scratched it out because we said cars. Okay, yeah.
Driving. Right. Italian drivers are crazy, especially if you go to cities like Naples and Rome. They're just all over the place. They park like lunatics. They're horrible parkers. If you've ever been to...
But horrible in the sense of blocking traffic and stuff, but they can parallel park like nobody ever seen.
No, bullshit. They don't know how to parallel park to save their life. They leave their ass out. They don't even bother doing it.
But every parking is parallel parking, like in Terlizzi.
And they leave the ass of the car sticking out. No. I disagree. I disagree. They drive like lunatics. They skid around in these cars because, you know, they're all manual transmissions, so they have a little bit of pep to them. which is fine. They don't obey traffic lights.
No, they're just suggestions.
But there are hardly ever any accidents. But when they are, unfortunately, they're fatal because they're on major roads. But the great thing about Italian drivers is on the highway. On the highway, if you are in the passing lane and a car is coming up behind you, there is no way an Italian driver will stay in that passing lane. He gets out of that passing lane immediately. Whereas in America, it's like, nope, I'm here and I'm staying.
No, but I'll add to the other thing where I think they're great drivers, because I've seen this in many towns where they're very aware of pedestrians, because there are crosswalks, but pedestrians don't use them. And you'll see people pushing their baby carriage out in front of them in the middle of traffic. Like
the baby carriage. So kill the baby first.
Exactly. But I personally have never seen anything where people stop on a dime and there's never somebody following so close behind that they rear in that person. And so it just seems like, at least even in the towns, I mean, they're obviously driving much slower, but there's definitely a good sense of driving.
And I think it's also because manual transmissions give you more control of your car. You can downshift and brake at the same time and you stop faster.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things I've seen. So they are really good drivers in that sense. Yes, I had that down.
Your turn?
Another one? I have like weird ones, but I got some good ones.
Nobody vacations like Italians vacation.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, actually.
Like 3 or 4 times a year. They're always about going on vacation, where they're going to go on vacation next. Then they're not very adventuresome when they go on their vacations. Like if they go to Egypt, they're going to go to a resort in Egypt.
Yeah, that's true.
If they go to, you know, Paris, they're going to make sure it's the Sheraton or the Hilton. It's all very safe kind of stuff, but they love to travel. They are like gypsies. Yes. They take vacations at least 3 or 4 times a year, and they're always going to explore new places or different places. They just love to travel.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Definitely love to travel. Yeah,
I have 2 more.
Go ahead.
Italians are great at keeping it in the family. When you talk about stuff that has to do with the family, it stays in the family. It stays in the house.
So Godfather.
Yes, it's very Godfather. It's very omerta, but it's, you know, God forbid if your parents or grandparents hear that you have said something personal about the family outside the family, you are dead meat. Mm. It's, you know, very, very closed-knit family situations. This is the family. What we say here stays here. And that happens with Italian Americans as well. And my last one.
Okay, then I might add one more.
You do yours first.
I'll do one first. I just thought of it because I was thinking of the other ones. My other ones are kind of like general ones that I'm not crazy about. But they do, I just realized, Italians do fishing, meaning seafood. I mean, yeah. It kind of goes with the food.
Uh-huh.
But fishing, to me, better than anywhere else. I mean, yes, you have like a huge seafood with Japanese culture, but there's something here, like when people come here.
Especially in the South.
Yeah, people come to Puglia and they go ballistic, crazy. I mean, even people from Italy, the rest of Italy come here. And it's just, and even myself, that I'm not a big seafood person, I'm even getting to be where I like all of it. It's like just so
But even basic things like fried calamari.
Oh, because it's fresh.
Yeah, because people come in and say, do you put sugar in your calamari? It's like, no, we don't put sugar in our calamari. But it's
not
just
frozen.
It's blow it. And it's fresh. It's not frozen, like Steven said. And we fry in extra virgin olive oil.
Well, that does help, yeah. Oh, yeah. That should have been number one. That should have been the last one. Oh, is that what yours is?
No, no.
Oh, that'll be the last. Well, no, because we need an odd number, so it's not going to be the last one. So go ahead.
Okay. Here's my last one.
Okay.
Nobody does drama like Italians.
Okay.
Drama is what it's all about. Look at Italian mothers. It's like Jewish mothers on steroids. Between guilt and you've put a sword through my heart. I mean, nobody does drama. And the clear proof of it is, number one, lyric opera. opera, right? Opera is all about drama. The woman is going to kill herself.
Oh, yes. It's, I mean, yeah.
If you look at...
Does opera translate to something? Because it's like that. It should be translated to drama.
Okay. Yes. No, opera just means work.
Work.
One of my favorite ones is the statues and depictions you'll see of the Addolorata Madonna, the Madonna Addolorata, the pained Madonna. She's always dressed in black, and she always has a dagger through her heart. It is like, because that's what because when you as a child, like Jesus did to her, when you as a child either do something wrong, or if you as her child, for whatever reason, should happen to pass away before she does, it is a dagger through her heart.
Well, remember the, we did this, I don't remember, guys, again, this is one of the beginning episodes, go back. We did the Passion Play in Terlizzi for Easter. Oh, my Lord, the woman.
The New Testament is, or maybe the whole Bible, but the New Testament especially, is clear proof that it was written not by four Jewish evangelists, but rewritten by Italian men who just put that drama in there of pain and suffering and the poor mother and the
mother
son
screaming,
and father.
Like,
and,
oh, my son, screaming. I was like, whoa, this is, I mean.
I'm telling you, I'm convinced the Bible was written by Italians. Yes. None of this Jewish stuff, all right?
All right, the last one then has to be, nobody does extra virgin olive oil like Italians.
Exactly, especially the in Puglia.
And I, guys, I mean, come on. This is like a no-brainer. You heard all this stuff from us. I mean, Spain is the largest producer, but it's mild, doesn't have much flavor, and whatever.
Greek has maybe flavor, but...
Italian olive oil
is where it's at.
And Puglia specifically.
It lasts longer. It tastes better. It's better for you. You know, we didn't start it. The Greeks started it. It's not like olive trees are indigenous to Italy. They did come from Greece or maybe from Crete or one of those places. But Italians have perfected the art of extra virgin olive oil.
Yes. And mic drop. Boom.
Boom. So there, bitches.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for listening to
this.
Thank
you.
Yes, remember to hit subscribe on your podcast player so you never miss another episode. Sign up for our newsletter, which I have been terrible about the newsletter, but I'll try to be better about the newsletter stuff.
Nobody reads. Don't worry about it.
They do. Our listeners read my newsletter.
Whatever.
They think you write it, but I... it's a newsletter. What else?
And the teaser that we said earlier will... one of the future podcasts will be about... Stephen and I have just been cast for roles in a movie being filmed here in Puglia in August. And we have speaking roles.
We should do a podcast from the set.
If
it might be
kind
of boring, but
yeah. No, it would be boring. But to ask if they let us.
Oh, actually, we can talk to the director.
Yeah,
it'd be fun. Yeah. It'd be fun for him. A little publicity.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Everything, and until next time, arrivederci.
Buon notte.
Ciao.
Ciao.